You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey guys, so a bit of a different episode today. Instead of just recording the same conversation with the same people, again, this is going to be, what you're going to hear is me on the Indy Cornrows podcast, but inserted here, so me, Mark Schindler and Tom Lewis, both from Indy Cornrows. Tom runs that site, and Mark runs their podcasting and writes for them. Talked about a lot of the NBA restart stuff going on with all of Sham's new reporting and Woj's and some of the safety protocols and the players' concerns about returning and how it all impacts the Pacers. It was a really good conversation. I wanted you all to hear it. But, of course, go check out their podcast. You know, this is one that I was on, so it makes sense to share it with you guys here in this audio feed as well. But, of course, they do, or Mark and the gang over at the Indy Cornrows podcast do a lot of their own unique, awesome content. And, of course, Mark is an awesome host for the show. He's probably the most prepared host for any podcast I've ever been on. And Tom is one of the a pillar of the Pacers community, of the Pacers content community. So go check them out, IndyCornrows.com. You know the deal for all that. But yeah, here's our conversation about the NBA restart and all things around that regarding the Pacers.
Today is June 16th, 2020, and I'm joined by my co-host Tom Lewis and Tony East. So fun fact, Tony is actually the first person that I ever did a podcast with. So I don't know if you remember. It seems like it feels like it was almost like 2 or 3 years ago, but that was I think that was like 2 days after the last game. So that was kind of wild to think about, but glad to have you on, man. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Glad to be back. You've had me back for round two after Scott and Tom embarrassed me with the history lesson last time I was on. So.
Hey, man, I got a little embarrassed too.
I got invited back.
Yeah,
It's all current events now, though, so yeah. We really need you.
I'm more prepared for this one.
Yeah, I definitely feel more prepared for this one too. So we were planning on talking about the playoffs, and we'll still be talking about the bubble and everything, but just to go off right off the bat, and you guys can fill in as well. Shams Charania of The Athletic just dropped a report of the NBA PA's health and safety guidelines leading into the season startup. So we have phase one, which is June 12th through the 22nd. All players are returning to their home market by the 22nd. Voluntary individual workouts can be taking place at team facilities, but still no group workouts. Phase two, June 23rd to the 30th. It's when the mandatory testing starts. And one of the wrinkles that has been added in today is the salary reduction for non-participating players has been figured out. So it's a very intricate number that I don't necessarily have a reasoning behind yet, but it's 1/92nd point. So 1/92.6 of a player's salary is reduced for each game missed, with a max reduction of 14 divided by 92.6. And phase three, so yes, but with phase two, players have until the 24th to announce whether or not they will be or will not be participating. Phase three is from July 1st to the 9th, to split 9th, 10th, 11th, because teams are arriving in Orlando at the end of that. But the first part of that, individual workouts are mandatory starting on the first. Group workouts are still prohibited, but head coaches can now participate in drills. In phase 4A, which is July 7th to the 11th, is when teams start to depart for Orlando on a staggered basis. So teams will be, you know, split up as they move across country to get down to Orlando. Room isolation. So you have to have two negatives within 24 hours in order to be removed from room isolation. League and team staff must wear, this is the wildest part of the entire report. League and team staff must wear proximity sensors that go off if you are within 6 feet of someone for a certain amount of time, which is kind of wild to think about. That is optional for players though. Face masks are required for all times for all players and personnel. And on July 7th, random drug testing begins again. That was also instituted without testing for recreational drugs. Phase 4B, that's from July 9th through the 21st is when group workouts start. So team practices can start happening. Phase 5 is July 22nd through the 29th, which is three scrimmages against teams in the same hotel. So we were talking about that a little bit earlier. There will be a... the hotel matters. Who you're playing against leading up to the actual season makes a difference, which is kind of wild to think about. So maybe we'll have a hotel draft. We can only hope. And phase six will be when play starts. So I guess just right off the bat, I want to ask Tony, what are your thoughts kind of coming off that? That was a lot to unpack for sure.
Well, before we get into some of the more and less interesting parts, and we can move chronologically through that, I do think that since that was a lot of what came out today was the safety stuff that they sent to teams, I like the way they're doing it where it's smaller workouts, then individual workouts with the team, then with coaches, then group workouts, then you keep slowly adding in other levels to keep guys as much or as bubbly, quote unquote, as possible just to prevent spreading and things like that. I think that actually is not maybe the safest way. Obviously, there's more than 16 teams and things like that. But if you're going to do it this way, that is a pretty good way to make sure you're ramping up in the safest way possible from face to face.
Yeah, I would fully agree with that. I think I obviously still this leads to more questions, but I think having this kind of concrete plan in place and starting to see how things fall in the line instead of just kind of thinking about it, nonstop for a month, that definitely provides a little bit of a sharper image. Tom, what are your thoughts? Just kind of going off that right away.
Yeah, I know we're talking about the concern still. And like you say, you're building up gradually and hopefully that'll build up the confidence of everybody, assuming, there are minimal issues with the testing and all that. And I know the concern now is it seems like the news out of Florida regarding the virus is continually getting worse. But again, once you're in that bubble, or if they can get into the bubble, I guess that wouldn't matter as much. I do like the term bubbly, though, keeping the players bubbly. I think maybe Victor can go from feathery to bubbly. That'd be a good thing.
That would be priceless. I don't really know how that translates on the basketball court. How does one be bubbly on the basketball court?
Well, I think, Doug McDermott is not bubbly, right? Because no one ever gives him any space, but... Who would, like Jeremy Lamb, I guess, gets given a lot of space. He's a bubbly player.
Yeah, I like it. I think we'll try and coin it. Depends how long the bubble lasts.
Hey guys, gonna do a quick little break here to talk to you about Rock Auto. Chain stores have different prices and tiers for professional mechanics to do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody, and they're reliably low. At RockAuto.com, they always offer the lowest prices. Rather than changing prices based on what the market will be like airlines do, rockauto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or account login. It's the best place to get parts for your car. It's a family business. They have everything from engine control modules to brake parts. They deliver it all directly to your door. They have a super awesome, remarkable, unique catalog. Best of all, their prices are low. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts they have available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On and the How Did You Hear About Us box. So they know that we sent you. Go check them out over at rockauto.com.
I think one of the first things that I really want to bring up today in talking about, obviously, when initially everything was passed and the Players Association voted and agreed to put the NBA Governor's Board of Governors plan into action, everything seemed like very cut and dry and like it was ready to get going and off the rip. And Tom and I talked about that at the time. And obviously in the last, 4 or 5 days, things have come out about a sect of players that is less enthusiastic is the wrong way to put it, but they're bringing up very valid concerns about the potential of a restart. And Kyrie Irving has been the head of that along with Avery Bradley and Dwight Howard, according to Shams and Woj's reporting. There's been a lot of blowback to it, and I kind of just want to gauge where you guys think, or not think, what your opinion is kind of looking at that, because I think there's been a lot of discourse about that, and I'd like to get your opinions for sure.
Well, I do think part of that is sort of mentioned in what Sham said today and is interesting is that they set a concrete date on you have to decide to play, right? So they're putting a timeline on this conversation, and that's the start basically of the phases. Like, they're not playing it, but they have 8 days to decide. Like, today we officially have that clock of knowing what players are going to decide to do. And even if you don't agree or do agree with the points Kyrie and all those guys are trying to make, I think what they did and Kyrie being part of the Players Association itself here is they opened the door for other guys to express concerns in other ways to say, well, okay, you don't agree with this part of the plan. I don't agree with this part of the plan. You know, that's what Donovan Mitchell's saying with the contract stuff and why him and Tatum and Bam, I think, are heading the insurance policy stuff for their next contract. And then you have, you know, Avery Bradley coming now and helping out their way. So I think they just cracked the door for players to air out concerns about everything, which is exactly what the Players Association is supposed to do, which A, forces the NBA to, you know, try to work on, you know, the solution, make it more refined for everybody, and B, just allows guys to be more comfortable and make these decisions if they want to play or not. So I give Kyrie a lot of props for both airing out his personal grievances and allowing everybody else to do so in a way that could help safety and could get more players there, and the ones who want to be there will be there if they want to.
I mean, the way I look at it, for all the players, it has to be about safety. I don't think any of them can really think about the financial aspect, although that's got to be a driver. But if you're going to play or not, you want to play to get the money going. I mean, honestly, the Golden Goose is going to die here with the way the NBA is going right now. If they lose a year and they lose a revenue and it keeps shrinking, I mean, there's teams like Indiana. There are more teams like Indiana that would struggle to go forward. And if they have to play in front of a half-full arena next year, at best case, or three-quarter full arena, they're not making money. And, you know, you think about, you know, think about sitting in the field house and you have those ribbons of advertising around the two, you know, between the first and second and the second and third levels. And, you know, are they going to be able to have all those advertisers return? Are they going to return at the same rate? Doubtful. There's no way. You know, it's the money just might not be there in the end. And I feel like a lot of these discussions go on with people thinking at some point everything's going to be right back to normal and all the money's going to be back to normal and all the ratings and all, and, you know, everything's going to be normal. But there's so much unknown that I feel like in some cases the players, you know, do need to be kind of greedy and get what they can now while there's still a plan and they can still get something, because you don't know what's going to come down the road.
Yeah. I fully agree with that. I think, oftentimes when the general fan or general person thinks about the NBA and player salary, you know, they look at a guy like Kyrie Irving or LeBron James making, you know, full level maxes, the super max. But Ed Davis, who plays for the Jazz right now, brought up a really good point yesterday in an interview talking about how, you know, lower level players who are on minimum deals, this is the potential reductions factor in a lot more for somebody making, you know, league minimum of like $800,000 or $900,000 compared to, you know, 27 or 28 million and having all the advertisements on the outside of that. And obviously, you know, we'll talk about things that are bigger than financials, but right now that's something that's very significant and could definitely be something that factors into to guys willing to play or not willing to play. Mainly I'm hoping that the plan rollout will hopefully ease some minds a little bit. It doesn't necessarily ease my mind. I think that there's still a lot of questions in regards to that. But I think kind of going off that as well, there's obviously, you know, all the things going on in the world with the protesting and just kind of the general issues that are going on in U.S. society. I'd also like to get your guys' opinion on what you think about the ability of being able to use the NBA as a platform, whether that would maybe take away from some of that coverage or whether you think it can be kind of a bolster for that.
I think we've heard both sides and they've both been aired out pretty well, actually. You know, Lou Williams, I think is who it was that tweeted like, look, if you are at a protest or reading coverage of a protest and then you stop doing that to watch an NBA game, we're distracting you from the point that we are trying to make and the point that we are trying to emphasize right now. And that's a great point. That's totally true and something that likely will happen leading into next month. And then you have Brogdon on the flip side, which this is super relevant because this is a Pacers show, mm-hmm. You know, saying There are guys who want to go and do what Tom said, make the money both for the league and for themselves so that they can use that money to continue to push their cause. So I think that there are some valid points on both sides of that discussion in terms of, you know, combating systemic racism and how they want to go about that. And it seems like Kyrie's on the opposite side where he says the distraction is greater than the good that playing will do. But I think players have to decide which side makes more sense to them in that way.
Yeah. And that is, you know, a different conversation really than, you know, debating between the virus and the money and all that. But it obviously is just a bigger factor right now. And, you know, like I kind of feel like I fall in with Brogdon. I've heard him talk about it and he speaks so well about it and is so focused that it really makes sense. But not everybody's Malcolm Brogdon. Not everybody wants to be, you know, with a mic in their hand and talking and being a huge voice and want to maybe support that cause in different ways, and maybe basketball takes away from them. So again, that is kind of an individual decision. Obviously the players feel that way as well. So I can see where Lou Williams is coming from with his point of view, and you know, certain guys just may not feel comfortable, you know, stepping away from their community or their family at this time. And that's a huge factor as well. But in the end, they, you know, it's a business. And so they will be able to take a stand. They'll be able to make some money. But if they want to get back to where they have the, you know, that money is a powerful thing in the U.S. right now. And getting that generational money for families and communities to do good and do what you want to do is a big factor that they all have to weigh. I mean, I don't envy them on some level with that, because it just is so complicated, and everybody has to go at it from, you know, their own personal perspective, and, you know, it's their conscience. They have to look themselves in the mirror and do what's right. So I don't think, you know, as Tony said, we've heard all sides, and, you know, no one's right or wrong. There's no way you can denigrate anyone's opinion on this, because it's all personal. So that is really adding to this mess where no one's real comfortable going down there right now, probably. And then now, you know, you have something where they're more focused on doing what's right in their community, by their family, and by the community. And, you know, they have to trust that first and foremost.
Let's take a little stoppage here to talk about the best protein bar ever, Built Bar. They're the best. It's the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. We've been talking about it for months. We're going to keep doing it until you try it and tell me how awesome they are, because everybody who's tried it says they're delicious. And they are. There's 16 awesome flavors, some nut-free ones, some nut ones. There's some really good fruit-flavored ones. There's some really good ones that have, like, peanut butter in them, so they taste like Reese's. There's some ones with almonds. They're really good. They're really good if you're health-conscious. They're great for losing weight. They're great for gaining muscle. They're high in protein, low in calories. It's basically the best protein bar ever, a nice chocolate base. Only, for example, in the mint brownie, 4 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbs, 110 calories, and 15 grams of protein. They're awesome. If you go to BuiltBar.com, that's BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order. Go check them out at BuiltBar.com with the code LOCKEDON.
One of my friends brought up a really good point to me today, because I'd been leaning more towards towards Kyrie's views, which I totally, you know, understand where he's coming from. But I think there also is, you know, not everybody thinks exactly the same, and you know, not everybody would necessarily feel quite the same about basketball not being played. You know, and sometimes it's better to try and use the platform in a way that maybe you do reach some of those people who are, you know, on the edge about it, and you're able to reach a new understanding with people who aren't coming from the same place. So I don't know. There's no, you know, real answer to it. Regardless, it's a tough decision. You know, looking at kind of, you know, moving off this a little bit, I'd like to just kind of garner your thoughts on, you know, with the season coming back, and your personal thoughts on what this could be health-wise and outside COVID, because I know I talked with Tom about it a little bit, and I wrote on it last week about, you know, just the potential issues for injury and fatigue coming up in this upcoming season and how that could compound in the next. I'm just kind of wondering what you guys think about the way that play will be ramped up so quickly.
Well, I think for the Pacers, assuming that everybody has recovered, I mean, they're a pretty deep roster. So I think they're pretty well suited to handle a lot of games really fast, especially because they can use a replacement player on Jeremy Lamb for just a warm body in practice, which, since it'll be every other day, I think, for 50 days or something, I think, while they're there, basically, like, and depending on their scrimmages, I mean, they could basically play every other day from July 22nd to the end of August, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. Just having anyone who can help you out in practice and give those guys the needed rest and whenever regaining time that they need is super helpful. And yeah, your article title, 4 games in 5 nights, is perfect as this carries into next season too. It's like these guys are going to get, they're going from nothing to getting hammered both in the coming season and next season if they try to fit it into the old time frame. So it's going to be super fascinating to see how this shakes out. I think the Pacers are pretty well suited though for the coming season just because they're a deeper team, right? And they can, because, you know, Warren and McDermott and Justin Holiday and even Aaron can play both guard spots, and Vic and Brogdon, these guys can play. Sabonis starts out of position. Like, they have so many guys playing out of position or at different positions that they can mix and match their way to a cohesive rotation no matter what's going on this year. And they only lose, you know, if Justin Holiday leaves, they only lose one of those guys next year. They're well equipped for it, but it is, I mean, they have a lot of kind of injury prone guys on their roster. And given that they're going to be playing a lot more, or a lot more frequently, at least like on a day-to-day basis, that could be the hard part for them to deal with, is they could set themselves up for more injuries, but they are well equipped to deal with them.
Yeah. Cause what I wrote about it that I've thought about, and obviously, you know, we're not gonna have an answer to it yet. But I do wonder if they continue to not play Victor on back-to-backs and how that impacts team success during the season startup, because it's harder to, you know, obviously when you're in a playoff setting, I'd imagine in the playoffs he will play every game, but at the same time, he can't really not play every game. Well, it'd be difficult to not play every game in the 8 leading up, and the way that it could factor in next season, because I believe Kawhi played, you know, he still hasn't played back-to-backs this year. So that's definitely something interesting to look at, considering that Victor had not played any back-to-backs yet down the stretch of the season.
Yeah, and I think like Tony said, Pacers do have some pretty good depth there, at least to get going, get through those 8 real games, and then at points in the playoffs, if they, you know, if they need to tap into, you know, Edmund Sumner, Jakarr Sampson, they've had success with those guys. After seeing Nikola Jokic, I'm kind of hoping Goga comes back, you know, just completely rocked out and ready to roll. Yeah, but I don't know if I'm going to rely on that, but you never know. Could happen. Okay. but at least with that, you know, I guess that's, you know, third line depth that may impact all teams, and the Pacers at least have some guys at each spot that they could fill in if they need to.
I mean, definitely going down the stretch, Goga did not look like he was a guy who would end up, you know, he looked like he would probably, much like Aaron Holiday last year, kind of getting slashed out of the rotation a little bit as they cut down for the playoffs. But now it definitely seems like there's some real potential for him to see some real meaningful minutes as a backup big. Overall, there are just so many questions and variables that are going to factor into this season and next season. And, all right, guys, thank you. Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Mark.
It was great talking. What are you guys working on right now?
I'm working on how the hiatus or the suspension, whatever you want to call it, could have helped the Pacers more than any team. I think that's an interesting topic since they had a third of the roster basically banged up right beforehand. And once the schedule comes out, of course, we'll all be working on analyzing that to death. So mm-hmm. Look forward to that.
Cool. I'm gonna throw a little love to the Fever because they're going to be playing.
Oh yeah, that's right. That was announced today that the WNBA is coming back. I believe it's the week before the NBA starts.
I think a week. Yeah, mid-July sometime. So
cool. Awesome. All right. Well, guys, thank you again for coming on. To everyone listening, stay safe out there. Have a good rest of your day. Thanks for listening.